Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of Varnashram Dharma, text number 37. Word meanings. Na, not, he, certainly, tasya, for the realized person, vikalpa, of something separate from Krishna, akya, perception, ya, which perception, cha, also, mat, of me, dikshaya, by realized knowledge, hata, is destroyed, until, deha, of the body, antat, the death, kvachit, sometimes, kyati, such perception, tataha, then, sampadyate, achieves equal opulences, maya, with me. Nahi tasya vikalpakya. Yacha madikshaya hata. Adehantat kvachit kyatis. Tata sampadyate maya. Nahi tasya vikalpakya. Yacha madikshaya hata. Adehantat kvachit kyatis. Tata sampadyate maya. Nahi tasya vikalpakya. Yacha madikshaya hata. Adehantat kvachit kyatis. Tata sampadyate maya. Nahitasya vikalpakya. Yacha madikshaya hata. Adehantat kvachit kyatis. Tata sampadyate maya. Nahitasya vikalpakya. Yacha madikshaya hata. Adehantat kvachit kyatis. Tata sampadyate maya. Nahitasya vikalpakya. Yacha madikshaya hata. Adehantat kvachit kyatis. Tata sampadyate maya. Nahi tasya vikalpakya. Yacha madikshaya hata. Adehantat kvachit kyatis. Tata sampadyate maya. Translation. A realized soul no longer sees anything separate from me, for his realized knowledge of me has destroyed such illusory perception. Since the material body and mind were previously accustomed to this kind of perception, it may sometimes appear to recur. But at the time of death, the self-realized soul achieves opulence equal to mind. Opulence is equal to mind. Purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Lord Krishna explained in verse 32 of this chapter, this is 37 around today, that all material and spiritual objects are expansions of his potency. By realized knowledge of the Lord, one gives up the illusion that anything, anywhere, at any time can be separate from Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna has also explained, however, that one must keep the material body and mind fit for executing devotional service. Therefore, even a self-realized soul may sometimes appear to accept or reject certain conditions or objects within this world. Such brief apparent duality of concentration upon something other than Krishna does not change the liberated status of a self-realized soul, who achieves at the time of death the same opulences as Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. The function of illusion is to separate one from Lord Krishna, but the brief and occasional appearance of duality in the behavior or mentality of a pure devotee never separates him from the Lord. It does not constitute actual illusion, for it lacks the essential function of illusion, namely the separation of one from Lord Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes the self-realized devotees as follows. The devotee of the Lord does not see anything as separate from Lord Krishna, and thus does not consider himself to be a permanent resident of the material world. At every moment, the devotee is moved by his desire to serve Lord Krishna. Just as those who are inclined to sense gratification pass their time making arrangements for their enjoyment, similarly, the devotees are busy throughout the day arranging their devotional service to Lord Krishna. Therefore, they have no time to act like materialistic sense enjoyers. To ordinary persons, it may seem that a pure devotee is seeing something as separate from Krishna, but a pure devotee is actually fixed in his status as a liberated soul and is guaranteed to achieve a spiritual body in the kingdom of God. Ordinary materialistic persons cannot always understand the activities of a pure devotee of the Lord, and thus they may try to minimize his position, considering him to be the same as themselves. At the end of life, however, the results achieved by the devotees of the Lord and ordinary materialists are vastly different. Omo jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Nahitasya vikopakya yacha madikshaya hata adihanta kuchit kyatis tata sampadjate maya. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse, he says that it explains the previous verse. The previous verse was, just as I, the Supreme Lord, execute regulative duties by my own free will, similarly, one who has realized knowledge of me should maintain general cleanliness, purify his hands with water, take bath, and execute other regulative duties, not by force, but by his own free will. So he says it explains this, the point of this verse, that the liberated soul acts of his own free will, basically. He doesn't have to act under regulation because he's acting under his own free will. Actually, the purport that Kesava just read was talking about this idea, that the devotee doesn't necessarily have to follow any rules because everything he does is inspired by Krishna within his heart. And Krishna confirms that everything he does is correct, the right thing to do. So anyway, that's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse is quite different, which I'm going to read it in a moment, but it's quite different from the translation and the commentary. I have Bhanu Swami's translation of it. It's actually quite different. But anyway, this is one of those verses where I read it and I say, what? I couldn't really. I had a hard time following it, I have to say. But then Mohan Prabhu was mentioning to me this morning how in Bhagavad Gita, sometimes you have to look to see how the verses are connected to each other. I know myself for many years, and still I sometimes struggle with Krishna's train of thought. Why is Krishna, how is he presenting an argument step by step? Sometimes I think, what is this verse doing there? One that's always confused me is Chaturvanyam Mayashrishtam Gunakarma. When that is introduced. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidyabhushan, they do more, especially Vishwanath. He does a lot more of that kind of thing where he explains the context of the verse. Prabhupada does it somewhat, but not so much. He tends to take each verse as it is and not necessarily explain how Krishna is laying out an argument here step by step. So I to understand things, I kind of have to see how what's unfolding here. So I had a hard time with this verse in purport, actually, understanding it, because I expected the sentence to be completed in a different way a few times. And it's like, what? How does this explain that? So this is the idea of the verse here is that, well, Krishna says, a realized soul no longer sees anything as separate from me, for his realized knowledge of me has destroyed such illusory perception. So the basic idea here is that the liberated soul, now, one difference here between the way it's being presented here and the way Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does it, is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's explaining all these verses as if they apply to a jnani. And what we're hearing is that it's all about a devotee. A devotee is seeing Krishna everywhere, whereas a jnani is seeing that it's all one. So you can see that it's all one in different ways. You can see it as connected to Krishna, but you can also just have the Brahman realized, where you say that it's just all one. So it says here, now, of course, our translation here is that it's he's not seeing anything as separate from me. So whether it's devotee or jnani, they're seeing that it's all one. There's no duality. What's the word here? Vikalpa akya, the perception of something separate from Krishna. So he's not seeing that, so he's seeing only one thing, no second thing, no dvitiya, no second thing, only one thing. Since the material body and mind, so this is the way the liberated person is supposed to see, sees it all as one. Since the material body and mind were previously accustomed to this kind of perception, in other words, the perception of duality, since they had that habit previously before liberation, it may sometimes appear to recur. Now this comes up a few times in this verse where I can't figure out where it's saying it does occur, it does recur, or it just seems like it recurs. So this is a confusion I had in the purport. It comes up a couple of times. Is it that the devotee or the jnani sometimes slips into this vision of duality, but it's okay? Or that it just seems that way to us who always see in duality? Because then the way it's explained here, the but, you'd say, well, this is going to explain it. But at the time of death, the self-realized soul achieves opulences equal to mine. So I think, well, how does that explain it? I don't understand. It says, so basically the idea is that it appears that the devotee is seeing in duality, but at the time of death, he goes back to Godhead, or he gets liberation if it's a jnani. So I could read this in two ways. One is that you think he's seeing in duality, but he's not. Or that he is seeing in duality, but that's just like a spot on the moon. It doesn't really matter. So if he slips into duality every once in a while, what difference does it make? So I'm not sure which thing is being presented here. I think it's the first one, that it just seems to you that he's slipping into duality, but he's not really. That's the point, but seems like it could be read the other way. So I'm going to read this again, the purport. I really struggle with this. I have to commend Tom Maharaj Prabhu, how he prepares his classes. You can see he's got an outline. He's going step by step. He's got it all figured out. When I prepare for class, I do a lot of checking research here and there, but it's like all these disconnected ideas, and I come in here and try to throw them together. So mostly I'm panicking when I sit up here because I'm not quite sure what the heck I'm going to say because I haven't quite figured out what the next step is. So because I'm panicking here, I'm going to read the purport, make some comments, if I can figure out what to say. Lord Krishna explained in verse 32 of this chapter that all material and spiritual objects are expansions of his potency. So this is, in other words, it's all one. By realized knowledge, one gives up illusion that anything, anywhere, at any time can be separate from the Lord. The Lord also explained, however, that one must keep the material body and mind fit for execution of devotional service. So this is setting up some kind of a contradiction. Well, if it's all one, then it doesn't matter what I eat, or it doesn't matter what I do with this body. It's all, this is these dualities. So eating poison or eating prasadam, I shouldn't make any distinction because it's all one. But Krishna says, no, you have to take care of your body. So this is one way. This is it's being explained here that it's okay to see duality, in other words. This is a reason why the devotee might see in duality or act in a kind of a dualistic way. So it says, therefore, even a self-realized soul may sometimes appear to accept or reject certain conditions or objects within this world. So this is the first I got thrown off here. It says, may sometimes appear to accept or reject. Well, doesn't he accept and reject certain conditions? It's not that it just seems like the devotee does. He does eat prasadam and doesn't eat stool. He makes a distinction. So it's not that he just appears to make distinctions, but it seems to me that he actually does make the distinction. Anyway, I'm afraid I don't want you to all get tangled up in my mind, but strange things go on in there. Actually, I was thinking of this idea this morning, how, isn't it that people have they don't accept, of course, the gross materialist that, you know, what you see is all there is. But I was thinking, even in the mind itself, it's like infinite, isn't it? The mind, you can think infinitely, you can go back and back and back. It's like even in this little skull here inside, there's almost like there's an infinity in there, packed in there somehow. You can expand out. It never runs out. Anyway, going on here. Such brief apparent duality of conception upon something other than Krishna does not change the liberated status of a self-realized soul who achieves at the time of death the same opulences as Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. So, again, we have this such brief apparent duality of concentration upon something other than Krishna. So how do we explain this? That the devotee is, well, he's always seeing Krishna everywhere. And he is making these distinctions, but there's nothing wrong with that because somehow he's still seeing Krishna at the same time, isn't it? Because what the focus here maybe is on this idea of oneness. Now, we don't get too hung up in it, but in the Upanishads are all about oneness. And that's why Vyasadeva basically had to write the Vedanta Sutras, because people are hung up on this oneness. And also Jiva Goswami and the Sundarbas, because they see everything as one. And that's why for the Mayavadis, it's all one. That's all there is. Any distinction or duality that you see, that's just an illusion. So how do we deal with that? Well, our great liberated Acharya philosophers, they deal with that in different ways, especially by quoting different parts of the Vedanta, the Upanishads explain. Of course, basically the idea is that the Absolute Truth has energies, and those energies are one with him in some inconceivable way, a chintya way. So anyway, so then this next sentence is meant to explain all of this. It's meant to sort my brain all out. But the function of illusion is to separate one from Lord Krishna, but the brief and occasional appearance of duality in the behavior and mentality of a pure devotee never separates him from the Lord. So again, we have this brief and occasional appearance of duality in the behavior and mentality of a pure devotee. So it's not really, right? If it just says it's an appearance of reality, it's really not. So it doesn't separate him from the Lord. So I read this and I think, well, of course it doesn't separate him from the Lord because it's not duality. It just looks like it. So is that the point being made here? It doesn't separate him from the Lord because it's not really duality. It just looks like that from your perspective. Or is it that, yeah, it's a kind of duality, but it's a Krishna conscious duality because the devotee can do both things simultaneously, sees everything, and can use everything in Krishna's service and connect it to Krishna. But still, ultimately, what is he seeing? He's seeing Krishna, ultimately. He's seeing Krishna everywhere. Even when he's making distinctions according to, in other words, living an ordinary sense in this material world, acting on this material plane, apparently. Actually, when I was struggling with this idea, I was also thinking of the idea of the Uttama Adhikari comes down to the second-class platform to preach as a Madhyama Adhikari. So when you preach, then you make distinctions. The Uttama Adhikari doesn't make those distinctions. So to preach, you could say the devotee is, he's actually on that platform of oneness, you might say, but acting on the lower platform to preach in this material world. So anyway, this apparent duality, it does not constitute actual illusion, for it lacks the essential fact of illusion, namely the separation of one for Lord Krishna. So I guess that reinforces it, that same idea. Now, as the purport continues, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it seems like it's the first, there are two paragraphs, and I just read the first one, and the second one is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's comments. And they're very quite close to each other. They say pretty much the same thing. Although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talks more specifically about the devotee of Lord Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes the self-realized devotees as follows. The devotee of the Lord does not see anything as separate from Lord Krishna, and thus does not consider himself to be a permanent resident of the material world. What that has to do with it, I'm not quite sure. He sees himself, he's not permanent resident. I guess this is still the idea that he's detached from this world. So because he doesn't see himself as a permanent resident of this world, so he's not seeing the duality. That's another way of saying he's not seeing the duality. At every moment, the devotee is moved by his desire to serve Lord Krishna. Just as those who are inclined to sense gratification pass their time making arrangements for their enjoyment, similarly, devotees are busy throughout the day arranging their devotional service to Lord Krishna. So this seems to be an elaboration or explanation of this idea of how the devotee sees one, how it's all one, because he sees everything as Krishna, as in this sense, that it's Krishna's energy and everything is meant to be used in Krishna's service. So even then, there are certain distinctions that are made. In fact, I was thinking right away, the first principle of surrender is to anukulyasya sankalpa patikulyasya varjanam. So that means accepting and rejecting. Some of you might think, well, that's duality, to accept and reject. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, iccha dvesha. So that means essentially the same thing. That's considered sammoha. That's illusion, to accept certain things as that I like and reject things because I don't like them. So we say that the first two principles of surrender are to accept something and to reject something. Accept what's favorable to serving Krishna and reject what is unfavorable to serving Krishna. But then the explanation is, but that's the whole point, that it's centered on Krishna. That makes it transcendental. It's not about your own material desires. It's about your service to Krishna. That's why it's guna, triga, guna, tita. It's above the three modes of material nature. Okay, let's see here. So the karmis, okay. So the devotees have no time to act like materialistic sense enjoyers. To ordinary persons, it may seem that a pure devotee is seeing something as separate from Krishna, but a pure devotee is actually fixed in his status as a liberated soul. So this is another one of those sentences where I got switched up, going in one direction. I thought, wait, the sentence is going. To ordinary persons, it may seem that a devotee is seeing something as separate from Krishna, but I thought it was going to say that the devotee is not seeing anything separate from Krishna. But what it says is, the pure devotee is factually fixed in his status as a liberated soul, which I guess is another way of saying the same thing. And it's guaranteed to achieve a spiritual body in the kingdom of God. So this is another place where I thought, well, yes, the devotee is always serving Krishna. So even though he slips into duality, it's okay because he's going back to Godhead. But maybe I'm misreading that. Ordinary materialistic persons cannot always understand the activities of a pure devotee of the Lord. Taravaka Kriya Mudra Vigyaya Nabujaya. Prabhupada often quotes this, paraphrases the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can't understand the liberated soul, how the person is thinking. That's why I'm having such a hard time, because I don't understand how the pure devotee is thinking. This is trying to explain it. And thus they may try to minimize his position, considering him to be the same as themselves. At the end of life, however, the results achieved by the devotees of the Lord and ordinary materialists are vastly different. So this is a kind of resolution, I guess. It's like saying, however, the mixed up persons like Nagaraj Das try to understand this, whether the pure devotee sees sometimes in duality or always sees in oneness, don't worry about it, because they're going back home, back to Godhead. That's the bottom line. They're going back. The pure devotee is always liberated. Even if you think he slips once in a while, doesn't matter. He's going back home, back to Godhead. Whereas the materialist, not. That's not going to happen. So let me show you something else. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. First of all, this is his translation of this verse. Now, this is the way, I won't read the whole thing, but it says, now Krishna, of course, is speaking here. A realized soul no longer sees anything as separate from me, for his realized knowledge of me has destroyed such illusory perception. So that's the way it begins, Krishna's talking about me, the devotee, and his relationship to me, or self-realized soul. So this is, now Bhanu Swami's translation, as I understand, the way he does these sometimes is he matches the translation, because you can often translate things in different ways. So he matches it up with the commentary. So this is because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is writing in Sanskrit, so he's not translating the verse. It's already in Sanskrit, so he's not going to translate it into Sanskrit. So his purport is sometimes a bit of kind of a rephrasing of the Sanskrit, you might say. So judging from that, then Bhanu Swami constructs his translation sometimes to match what the purport says. So this is how he translates the verse. The Jnani does not explain about difference at all, since difference is destroyed by realization of me. I thought this was kind of an interesting phrase. It does not explain about difference at all. Anyway. Sometimes, however, before the body is given up, this false perception recurs. In other words, the perception of duality. So here, Krishna is saying, well, just like he did in the translation that we read, sometimes he may slip into duality. So here it does say that he may slip into duality. But after death, he merges with me. So we're talking about the Jnani here. Now, one thing I've found is that Bhanu Swami doesn't shy away from using this phrase, merging with Krishna, or merges with me. They're quite several places. Even in Bhagavad Gita, he uses the phrase, and then one merges with me. So I looked up this word. The Sanskrit word is sampadyate. Now, Srila Prabhupada translates this. I looked to see where Prabhupada... Now, I don't know if you know, but there's a nice, which I use, of course, for my work, I have to use it sometimes. There's a Sanskrit dictionary online. It's called sanskritdictionary.com. And it references Monier Williams and a couple of others. Professor Apte, he's called, and a couple of others. And they also reference Srila Prabhupada's books. They go to Srila Prabhupada's word for word, and they translate those. So his is there. Now, sometimes, like this particular word, sometimes it only comes up in Prabhupada's books. So this word is not in Monier Williams' dictionary. Actually, I've heard this, Gopi Pranadan, who made this point before, that there are words in the Bhagavatam that don't appear anywhere else in the Vedic literature. That's another example of the uniqueness of the Bhagavatam. It even has its own language. So this word, sampadyate, when I did the search, the only hits that came up were from Prabhupada's books. And it came up in several places. So this is how Prabhupada translates it. This is from... Let's see. This is from, well, there's four of them that come up earlier in the Bhagavad. Well, there's one in the Gita, actually. 1331, Sampadyate, he attains. And Sampadyate in the second canto attains success. Eighth canto becomes successful. And in the fourth canto is worshipped. So becomes successful. Now today it was translated as Sampadyate, achieves equal opulences. Maya with me. Maya with me or by me. It's often mostly in Prabhupada's books, Maya is translated as by me. Anyway, so let me read it. It's just a short purport, so it's getting late here. Let me read the purport. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. The cause of the jnani not being a slave to rules is explained. Like I said, this is all, according to Vishwanath, this is an explanation of the previous verse about how the jnani doesn't necessarily follow the rules. He acts according to his own free will. He does not perceive difference. Vikalpa akyataha. In other words, the jnani or the realized soul, jnani or devotee, acts this way because he sees that everything is one. So that's, on the basis of that realization, that's how he acts. That's why he sometimes chooses to follow rules and sometimes doesn't, because he sees oneness. Is that all right? That's what it says. So then someone asks a question of Krishna. By words, he may not express difference, since he says that Atma is the universe. Now first, this struck me. This is another way of saying it's all one, I guess. Atma is the universe. So this person's objecting, saying, by words he may not express difference, since he says that Atma is the universe, but does he not think in terms of difference? So he may not talk that way when he's preaching. He may say it's all one, but in his ordinary life, doesn't he sometimes show distinction? Perception, in perception? So then Krishna says, that perception is destroyed by direct realization of me. So Krishna says, no, it's destroyed. That duality. So then the person asks this question, is it not partially destroyed? So Krishna says, sometimes before he leaves the body, there is false perception, which was previously annulled. So Krishna says, okay. Sometimes, even though that duality was destroyed, sometimes it comes back. Sometimes it recurs, and the self-realized person does sometimes see again. So that's the way it goes. So this is, I guess you maybe the part. Actually, I didn't read this until I struggled with our devotee's purport for a long time. Then I said, well, let me see. The only other Bhagavatam commentator I have access to is Vishwanath. So sometimes when I'm struggling with something, I'll go with the Vishwanath. But in this case, not sure it clarified anything, except that it reinforced my idea that, well, maybe it does mean that sometimes the liberated soul can slip into illusion, which doesn't seem to be, you know, the tack that's taken by our translators here or by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But according to Vishwanath, yes, it can happen, at least for the jnani. Now, that's the other thing to remember here. It says this is the jnani that Vishwanath is talking about. He's not talking about the devotee. Although Krishna does say that perception is destroyed by direct realization of me. So somehow the jnani has gotten direct realization of Krishna, which is another thing to add to my confusion. All right. So, Madame Mohan Prabhu, clarify everything. Thank you.
Ah, there we go. When the opulence, a lot of times I'll think of the 10-7, one who's convinced of my opulence, he becomes a pure devotee. And since we're talking about jnanis and bhaktas, a lot of times you think of the 7-19, they realize Vasudev Sarvamiti, and then they become the devotee, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param, 1854. So for me, I always separate things in the tattva and the rasa. So first, when you're realizing Krishna is all one, that's in the tattva, But after Krishna is all one, what's it break down to next is your rasa, how to use everything in Krishna's service. So even we have an example of Lord Brahma. Now, is he liberated? And he's did he have a problem in the 14th, 13th chapter, the 10th canto? And then he, 14th chapter, rectified the...
Lord Brahma. You're talking about Lord Brahma.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did I pronounce it incorrectly?
I don't know. I didn't. Maybe I just didn't hear it.
Yeah, well, no, I don't talk very good. But he's certainly understanding how everything's Krishna. He created the whole material world out of Krishna's energy. So I often think that it's after you realize everything is Krishna, then you have the rasa of how you're interacting with the material world for Krishna. It's everything's being used in his service, but Krishna's reciprocating, and he's an individual Krishna that playful. So he does his, we have the element mixing in there of yoga maya. And there's something that'll spin everything around because there's the K factor. Krishna's doing something too. You know, he's interacting with the individual. So I often think if you bring that factor in, how Krishna's doing it with the relationship, then it makes sense to me. I don't know if that helped or not.
Actually, of course, to use Brahma as an example, it's a tricky one because we don't... What is his position? Is he a liberated soul or not? It's a question. He's still in the material world because he has some material desire, apparently.
I was thinking about... Jiva Goswami, he comments on the verse Anya Bhilashita Sunyam. And then he says Anya Bhilashita, Abhilashita, and he says that the suffix ta in the end, it says that how, I'm not sure, maybe one of the scholars here can say what example Jiva Goswami gives, but he says that if something to the effect that if somebody is in danger and a devotee calls out to Krishna, so it may seem that it is he's calling out separate from desiring to serve Krishna, but he's calling out actually, you know, that he's in danger and he calls out. So it seems that it is separate from Krishna.
Because he's trying to protect himself.
Yes, but that's what that suffix ta is there to include that situation. Mm-hmm. So the question you're bringing out here is that seemingly, you know, whether it is whether he does get into illusion or whether it seems that he gets into illusion. So I think Jiva Goswami to me. Addresses that by saying the suffix ta.
Yeah. I guess another way to say it is that the devotee's bhava, it encompasses everything else.
Exactly.
Subsumes everything else.
Exactly.
You know, so even what appear to us to be, just like the idea of the moon and the spots on the moon. So you're getting the light from the moon, so it overpowers everything else. So the devotee's bhava or rasa with Krishna overpowers, even though it seems to be, sometimes the devotee seems to be acting on the material plane.
But it's not. I mean, even like, his, I don't know if that was mentioned in Jiva Goswami's example, but, or maybe it was just my own thinking, but the urge to, for example, the urge to evacuate, yeah. So it is a natural urge to do so and the desire to do so, is that separate from Krishna? So I guess I'm just thinking that that's how that is, you know, that he is always thinking about Krishna, but seemingly he seems that he is in duality in such situations, but it's not.
Yeah, because, of course, we have examples of those who don't even like Rishabhdev, they act completely, you know, like really an avaduta doesn't even act on that ordinary. So it shows that it's possible to act that way, but the devotee has other purposes for preaching especially. He's acting in an ordinary way in this world.
I recollect that the ta refers to the devotee's nature, whereas there may be like temporary things like the cry for self-preservation. It's the nature that's being discussed in that definition of pure devotional service. That's my recollection. Who created that SanskritDictionary.com? Is it devotees that did that?
No, I don't think so.
Then I wondered, you used the term duality a lot. I wonder, could you define that?
Duality means two.
But in the context of what we're discussing here, how would you define it?
Tato Brahma Jigyasa. You have to read the Vedanta Sutra to understand what's the difference between one and two. Yeah, there's Ekam Dvitiya. What is it? Ekam Brahma Dvitiya Nasti. Yeah. Brahman is one, there's no second thing. I don't know, it's hard to think of it because we're talking about spirit here. It's sort of like you look out at the ocean and it's just all one, you see, it's just all water. So Brahman, we think it's all spiritual energy like sunlight. So this is oneness, means it's all that energy. But we perceive that there's something out. We're not just seeing it as light, you might say. We're seeing figures and forms, and we're seeing hot and cold and all these things. So from the platform of absolute non-dual perception, that's a kind of illusion to see duality, to see two things. Of course, and then we have the other explanations when you connect it with Krishna, to see something as separate from Krishna, that's seeing in duality. Bhayam dutiya. That's, of course, the source of fear. That's, of course, an important point in our philosophy, that when you see things separate from Krishna, then that's where fear comes from. I think of that a lot because I seem like I'm always worried about something, which is a kind of fear. Even when I'm not worried, I worry that I must be forgetting something I'm supposed to be worrying about. It's going to come back and get me. So yeah, that's duality is seeing. That's one way to define it, is seeing separately from Krishna. That's duality. Not seeing Krishna everywhere. The pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere. In fact, I was just reading it recently, where one of our acharyas was saying, you see the form, I think it was Vishwanath. And yet it's not that you just think, well, this is Krishna's energy. Sometimes it's presented that way. But the acharya, of course, Chaitanya Charitamrita also says, Ishta Deva Spurti. Spurti means a manifestation. So a manifestation, Krishna in his Leela, sometimes he presents himself as a spurti, an appearance, an apparition, right? Say. So the pure devotee sees Krishna appearing everywhere, actually. So then that way, it's really all one. It's all Krishna, all of these things that you're seeing that seem different from Krishna, they're actually all Krishna. That's really oneness.
It's unusual that there's such a difference of understanding, you know, that Vishnu, Chakravarti is referring to Jnani, right?
I didn't look back, but I presume that Vishwanath was probably, this is probably part of a thread where he's tying all of this, there's just several verses here that talked about, you know, the self-realized soul or self-realized sage. So I assume that previous verses he'd made that same point, that this is, we're talking about a self-realized jnani here. So then he's just carried it through to this verse too, apparently. But the acharyas, they sometimes, I'm editing, you know, a commentary on the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, and sometimes I just came across a verse, and sometimes I have to confirm with this devotee I'm working with, he's a Sanskrit scholar, and I say, well, Vishwanath is saying something different than what Rupa Goswami has just said. And sometimes Vishwanath and Jiva, they're the two commentators, sometimes they don't necessarily say the same thing. So I wonder, well, people are going to read this and say, wait, they're contradicting each other. I said, well, what can we do? That's what they said. So we had to just put it down there. That's what it is. So they do sometimes. Sometimes I say, well, how can it be both things? And I don't know. It's hard for me to understand. I say, well, one way I understand it is that, well, Krishna is unlimited, and he can have an unlimited number of meanings in the same words. So there is scope for that, you might say, philosophically. Just like Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, where he very directly says, I'm going to give you five explanations of this verse. And he does. He says, this is my first explanation, this is my second explanation, this is my third explanation. And he goes through it like that. And he does it word by word, practically. He says, oh, this word can also mean this. And that's why, you know, first I said this was about, you know, the material energy, but actually it's about Radha and Krishna's conjugal rasa. The same words, but he's taking them in different ways. So that's Krishna's potency, that he can say unlimited things with the same words. So, of course, what does that mean when you get right down to it? Well, how are we supposed to understand it? Well, we understand it according to our adhikar, according to our qualification. It's privileged information. And the more we become qualified, the more we have access to that privileged information. So that's why sometimes they can say different things. And they're both okay, even though with our limited brains, it may be hard to make them, to resolve the contradiction.
But one thing that sometimes the scholars criticize Srila Prabhupada for not giving exact translations to Krishnaize everything, like the first six chapters of Gita, you know, the yoga letter, but it's always brought into a Krishna conscious realm, which is, seems
yeah.
That's what maybe was done, you know, by our BBT translators, you know, with this.
Yeah, now one thing, when I read this, I thought, well, I wonder why they didn't follow Vishwanath in today's verse. And I was saying, well, they have access to different, they have Bhaktisiddhanta, they've basically followed Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary on this. So they can, in one sense, you could say, they have, I guess, I mean, there's this book, you know, that Prabhupada used, which like half a dozen or more commentators. And so the commentators don't always necessarily say the same thing. So Prabhupada often used Vishwanath, and he also used Jiva a lot, although he doesn't quote him directly, didn't mention him. But I've heard from Sanskrit scholars that if you look, you'll see that Jiva Goswami comes out a lot in Prabhupada's commentaries. So it seems like here they've decided to take Bhaktisiddhanta. Maybe Jiva Goswami also, I didn't see his commentary. So they just decided in this instance they're going to stick to the more, you might say, directly Krishna conscious purport to what's being spoken here. Yeah.
I was thinking of the Atmarama verse.
Yeah.
Now there's an example of how you can. And it didn't even touch on the ones that Sarvabhauma did.
Yeah, that's another brain twister.
And
the six explanations of the Atmarama verse.
I think.
Because what's funny about that, I find, is that it's not like the verse is being explained 64 ways. It's just that sometimes one word is explained in a bunch of different ways. So I think, well, how's that explaining the verse in a different way? It's like I've always had a hard time grasping that, exactly what's going on with that.
And then the Brahma Samhita also mentions the 64 arts. So these are a couple of the arts that they explain verses in different ways. They're also hard to understand. That they use agamemnic. How do you say that word? Something that's troublesome to understand. Agamemnic.
Enigmatic. Oh, enigmatic. Oh, okay.
So, and then there's the art of making riddles. You know, so I mean, there's.
Well, I was thinking of that too. There's a verse. In fact, I think I wrote it down here. That were, anyway, it's getting late. But in the 11th canto, Krishna says. Actually, let me look. Let me just read the translation. Oh, I didn't save it. Sorry about that. I thought I did. Anyway, Krishna says that the sages sometimes speak in kind of sly ways. Parokshavad is the term. Parokshavad. So indirect. They speak in indirect ways, and Krishna says, "I like that." Krishna likes it when the sages speak in riddles, and he also sometimes speaks. You might say speaks in riddles, and I think it's in the purport to that verse in the 11th canto, where it's described that this is part of Krishna's yoga maya samavrit. Krishna covers himself with his yoga maya to keep those who are not qualified. They're not able to understand Krishna. So one way Krishna does that is by speaking in these riddles. So you have to be empowered by Krishna to penetrate what's being said here. It's parokshavad.
He used the word esoteric in describing things that are esoteric. They did all these things. So I'm not sure what esoteric means. But
esoteric means hidden, occult. Well, it means accessible only to the qualified or initiated. And it's just like they have these secret societies, you know, so you can't enter into the esoterica unless you know the secret handshake and all that kind of thing.
And one little thing for me with duality and oneness is, if it's only one, then what did you add to make it two? Well, you added the idea that there's two, which is the illusion that there's two. Actually, it's only one. So a lot of times they'll say, well, these are the symptoms of the two. It's only spirit. But if you think that there's matter, that could be a problem. But when you get enough knowledge, you'll come out of that. You know, so it's like the symptoms of thinking there's something besides rasa is to think that you can be separate from Krishna, separate, because it's an eternal relationship. So then as they surrender, you get the different upgrades in your confidentiality.
Now, in our practice of sadhana, the assumption is there that we're seeing in duality. So that's why we're taught how to use that vision in its current state to serve Krishna, to accept and reject, getting back to that idea. So you might say it's not the duality, the vision of duality is ultimately we want to transcend it, but it's understood that it's there in the conditioned soul. So how do you use that vision of duality? Then you make the right choice to serve Krishna. You use the things by connecting everything to Krishna, acting as if you understand, and we might say that everything is one.
And that's what they say dissolves the subtle body in that verse.
Yeah, jariyatyashu yakosham nirginam manalo yata. Kapila Dev says, devotional service dissolves the subtle body. The first time I read the Bhagavatam, I came across that. It was really striking. Dissolves the subtle body. Wow, that's pretty interesting. All right, can I get out of here? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.